Welcome to Drop Everything podcast number 140. I'm your host, Dan Holzman. On this podcast, our special guest is juggler and unicyclist, Mark Wilder. Before I talk to Mark, though, let's thank our sponsor, the IJA. That stands for International Jugglers Association. Interested in juggling? Want to find a great group of jugglers? Then go to juggle.org and check out the IJA. All right, now drop everything and get ready for Mark Wilder. Welcome to Drop Everything podcast number 140. I'm your host, Dan Holzman, and our very special guest, Mark Wilder. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Dan.
Can I get a, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's your catchphrase.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Oh yeah. Oh, you're one of my favorites. I have a lot of people on the podcast from the past, and you're one of my favorite current performers, because I think you get it. You really get it. You understand what it's like to be a juggling professional, how to put a show together that's marketable, and how to go out there and make some money. So I appreciate what you're doing. So we'll get into that.
That means a lot. Thank you, Dan.
I'm not complimentary on everybody. I'm known for my blunt honesty, but I'm a big Mark Wilder fan. So this should be fun. Okay, let's start from the beginning. Where are you from, Mark?
I grew up in Needham, Massachusetts, it's a little suburb just outside of Boston, bordering Boston.
And what were your parents like? Were they large people? Were they athletic? Because you are a large, athletic man.
I come from, an athletic family. We're movers. So we kind of are very high energy family. I'm the youngest of three. My dad was, they're both runners, and my mom played soccer when I was a kid with an adult league. And yeah, so I come from a sporting family for sure.
Any showbiz background?
No, nope, none of that. I'm the first.
What did your parents do for a living?
My dad, Clyde, which is a name you don't meet a lot of Clydes these days, but my dad was, he worked for John Hancock Insurance in downtown Boston. So he was a train commuter, and my mom was a dental hygienist.
Nice. So pretty standard working parents, couple of siblings. And are you the biggest? Are your siblings tall as well? Because you're 6'4", 200 pounds right now.
I like to say I'm the superlative in the family. I'm the youngest, the tallest, the hairiest, the brightest, and the most modest.
And the best looking, right?
Yes, listen, I'll take it.
Well, great. So you grew up, you're athletic. Because like I say, when you look at jugglers, not all of us are athletic specimens. But you stand out because of your size. And I think that really works with your act as well, because you're a big, boisterous character.
Yeah, it's definitely an exaggeration of myself, just a little louder. It's a guy you probably only want to spend about 30 minutes with, which is good for my fair show.
Yeah, and you have a real 80s aesthetic. Is that something that resonates with you? Because you have the music, you have the mullet. And I guess it seems like you're a little early for the 80s. What year were you born? You were born in
79. So I lived the whole 80s. I got it all in. And because my brother and sister are 8 and 10 years older than me, I was heavily influenced by what they were listening to and their kind of adolescence. So yeah, the 80s is big for me. I just find it, I think it's just fun. The music tends to be upbeat and dancey, and the colors are bright. So it works well with the costuming and the music for my show. And as far as the mullet, I mean, it's a commitment. Let me tell you, Dan, I've had this thing for 5 years. I'm never out of costume with this thing. But the idea for me is that if people are laughing, I don't care if they're laughing at me or with me, if they're already chuckling just looking at me without knowing what I'm doing, I'm already winning. So that's the idea. I think it's funny. I think it's silly. And it works for the show for sure.
Well, the mullet is the perfect haircut, right? Because it's business in the front and party in the back.
That's right. I don't have to put sunblock on my neck anymore at fairs, which is nice.
So when did you decide, because you had the 80s theme first and then you decided to grow the mullet, or did it all kind of come together at once?
Kind of all came together. I kind of rebranded myself right around the pandemic, and I went leaned into the 80s aesthetic.
I think it's smart. And so we have a fanny pack. It's sort of very 80s, the headband, the haircut.
Yeah, the high tops, the tall socks, the short shorts.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the short shorts, that's another pretty funny 80s fashion.
I mean, at the events I work, people are asking to take photos of me before they even see my performance. So,
well, we'll talk about the fair environment, because to me, you're the perfect fair act. I mean, or a halftime. It's big and visual, right?
I do have to add, Dan, mm-hmm. that you were highly influential, I mean, in many ways to me. But one thing that resonates with me and I always think about and I share with others is the fact that in your book, you wrote that, and I believe you said Kmart at the time because it was an older publication, but if you don't get stared at in Kmart, then it's not a costume. And I think you could replace Kmart with the grocery store or whatever store you want. Like, if people are not staring at you, it's not a costume. And those are words I try and live by. Costuming, I think, is very important, and particularly at fairs where everything is kind of loud and bright. So I like to stand out.
Well, you know the big word now, branding, right? Branding. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a costume that I like, because it's when everything works in the same direction, like the costume, the way the performer speaks, the music, the certain aesthetic that has a uniform appeal that people can put their thumb on and go, oh, yeah, he's the 80s guy.
Right, right.
Like, even if you look at someone like Andrew Dice Clay, not my favorite comedian, but as far as someone whose every aspect moved in the same direction, you know, hey, Hickory Dickory, you know, the voice, the leather jacket, the mannerisms.
To the point that people don't know that Dice is really a character he's playing. And in the same sense where people might think I am my character, you kind of become one and the same.
You got the bonus plan, baby. Yeah. No, but I think very few jugglers realize that and create like this sort of cohesive character that stands out as besides just being, oh, he's the juggler. You know, I think maybe David Akin, checkerboard guy.
Right.
Has a nice branding. But a lot of jugglers are just sort of themselves, kind of wearing, you know, the typical maybe vest and tuxedo pants, whatever it is. But they really haven't created kind of a cohesive character like you did. And that's very impressive. And that's something really for people to look at and look at your website and your promo material, but also the environment you work in. Because fairs are very difficult, especially when you're a ground act. There's a lot of different environments you got to be able to handle. But before we get into your career part, where did it all start? Did you see jugglers as a kid? Had you any interest in juggling or unicycling as you were growing up?
I had no connection with it, no exposure to it. I mean, obviously, I probably saw the circus at the Boston Garden when I was a kid, but I there's no one in my life who juggled. I didn't have a weird uncle who unicycled.
Right.
That's me now.
Nice.
But yeah, I didn't have any exposure to it. And the unicycle was something I discovered on my own at 22. On my birthday, I decided I was going to quit drinking, smoking, and drugs. Not that I was into anything crazy, but I definitely have an addictive personality. So I'm kind of an all or nothing guy. And I decided that day to go sober. And I was driving home from work in Olympia, Washington, and I passed a bike shop, and hanging in the window was a unicycle. So I, without thinking about it, without ever knowing anyone who rode one, I just pulled over, walked in, bought it. And every day after work, I'd be in my work jeans and boots. I'd practice the unicycle, and by the end of the week, I could ride. So that's how I got into unicycling.
So your sobriety, I can understand the unicycle better if you maybe were drunk when you saw it and like, hey, unicycle. I got to get me one of those. But what about it just even appealed to you at all? Because even the idea of seeing a unicycle, you know, I get that it's sort of in combination with your sobriety. But did you say, I'm going to turn over a new leaf, and to do that, I need myself a unicycle? Like, how did you even think about wanting to ride that thing?
I think, like many decisions in my life, I did it without much thought, Dan.
And right, right.
It was very spontaneous. And yeah, so I've been riding now 23 years sober. And I just kind of, it became my addiction. And I think with each passing year, surprisingly, I ride more than the last year. It's quite an obsession where it's not just in performance When I'm not performing, I'm into unicycle sports. So I play unicycle basketball. I do distance riding and I ride a mountain unicycle. So it's quite the obsession.
And what's the farthest, so you say distance riding, what's the farthest you've gone on the unicycle?
I've ridden probably 40 miles would be my longest ride. Yeah.
In like a single day you're talking or?
Yes.
Oof. Does that require Lycra? How do you keep the pain of the seat from?
Yeah, it definitely requires lubrication.
Oh, yes. You don't want chafing. You got to avoid chafing, especially when those shorts. You got to make sure you got some protection down there.
That's like a whole nother podcast episode, I think. Yeah, we can save that for another day.
Well, that's for the Unicyclist podcast. We'll get into the juggling stuff pretty quick. And what was your career path? You said you were coming from work. Did you have any ideas what you wanted to do, you know, in your teens, and what path were you on when you saw this unicycle?
At the time, I was working construction, and that's what I did for the better part of my 20s. I worked construction until I moved from Washington down to California. I was a concrete finisher, which is pretty intense work. And when I landed in California, I had just finished walking the Pacific Crest Trail.
Oh, nice.
From Mexico to Canada. And in my 20s, I enjoyed going to the gym and lifting weights. And I realized that I wanted in a creative outlet that was also physical and not indoors after being outside walking for 4.5 months. So I decided juggling. Somehow I decided juggling was what I was going to do. From that point on, I got three balls, started learning. I found that there was a local juggling club in San Luis Obispo. And yeah, I met my people.
That's a big transition, because very people think, well, I want to do something athletic. I want to do something creative. Juggling. that's a pretty odd. Yeah, that's a pretty odd one. So was this after the unicycle or what? So you didn't juggle at all when you got the unicycle, right?
No. In fact, like a lot of unicyclists who are into unicycle sports, I kind of look down on juggling, or a lot of people say, hey, clown.
Right, right.
So I kind of had a concept of juggling, a misconception, I suppose. And yeah, and then when I found juggling, I was 29, which
wow.
is
right, right.
a little late in the game.
Yeah, especially to become a professional. I think there's always two schools. You have like the Cremos and the Gatos, you know, who start as kids.
Right.
But I think the oldest I've heard of is maybe El Gran Picasso. I think he was in his later 20s. Or, you know, Dick Franco was also a little bit older. But 29, so you learned to juggle at 29.
Yeah, I mean, fortunate wow. for me, you don't have to be that good to be entertaining.
Well, I think that's another lesson, right?
That's what I've banked my career on.
No, it's another lesson, because you do big tricks. Like, your tricks are very impressive, and they just stand out as being a stunt. Like, as far as a lot of people can juggle, you know, and they can do lots of patterns and different variations, but I think it's more important to do stunts. And if you can master 5 or 6 big stunts,
right,
that's a basis of a great show. So what are some of the stunts you do now? Let's talk about that, because I really like the Salerno ring work you're doing now, which is the new prop with the ball inside the hoop that's balanced on your forehead that revolves as you juggle. But you've combined that with right. unicycling, right?
Right. Yeah, I can do that one. The trouble is, my performance venue generally is a fairgrounds, and it's outdoors. Mm-hmm. And the Salerno ring just doesn't really play well in the wind. Mm. So it's not something I often perform, but I believe you saw me performing in a theater at Game of Thrones yeah. juggling festival. So yeah, it's one of those tricks that is reserved for the very few times where I'm on a stage and it's indoors.
And was that on the giraffe or the smaller unicycle? I forget. I just remember it being a big trick.
Yeah, I think I did it on the smaller unicycle. I do it just as easily on the giraffe, but for the timing purpose of the show, I just use the small one. But I also do the Borzokin pole, which mm-hmm. has the similar, but instead of the ring, it has a platform where you're doing the head bounce ball on top. And I also do that on both the small unicycle and the giraffe.
Another beautiful visual trick. Did you ever see his version of it? The Borzokin pole, the guy who invented it?
No, I haven't seen video of that, no.
Oh, amazing. He would do it on a large rolling globe, juggling 5 large balls while bouncing the ball on the platform, while balanced on his forehead. Amazing.
That's just insane. Insane.
He died tragically young, though. He died in, I think, an auto accident going between gigs. This I'd have to check with David Kane, but that's my memory, that he passed maybe 20 years ago or so.
Okay. That's a shame.
Amazing, amazing trick. It's amazing, too, because you don't think it would be possible. You know, balancing something and then having the ball bounce on top of the platform while it's balanced. How long did it take to learn that trick? That just the bouncing of the pole, the ball on the pole?
Well, I started with the head bounce with the ball. Mm-hmm. So I find it's important to learn that first. And then I already had face balance pretty locked in. So once I could bounce the ball, do the head bounce, the pole came, I wouldn't say quickly. I would say it took at least a year to where I felt I could perform it.
And is the key just keeping the ball in the center of the platform and kind of a low contained bounce?
Yeah, I don't know if it has to be that low, but yeah, you are trying to get it to center, and it's something that you're doing consistently while the trick is happening. So you're with each bounce, you're trying to keep it towards the center. So you're making these micro adjustments with the face balance to angle it towards the center. Sometimes it wants to drift out. Yeah, so that's all happening while you're juggling. What I just juggle three clubs, which after your story sounds pretty basic, but that's what I do.
Could you do that on the unicycle too, or is that too much movement?
I can. Yeah, I do it on the unicycle. I have a little belt to hold my clubs to get the bounce started, and then I pull the clubs out of the belt, and that's definitely a trick I haven't performed, but I can do it pretty consistently in the gym, which obviously there's a huge difference between what you can pull off in the gym and what you can do on stage. So,
and when we're talking outdoors, how do you find like looking up? Do you usually wear sunglasses? Do you find you need to? Are you blinded looking up at the sun?
Right. I mean, that's the beauty of the 80s costuming. I get to wear the giant 80s sunglasses. So that really helps with my head balance.
And what was that big brand? Was that Oakley's? Was that the big 80s brand?
That was a big brand. Yeah, the brand I wear is Pit Viper.
Okay.
And it's a newer brand. It's a retro brand, and they've happily sponsored me with sunglasses, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, nice. So you approach them, or do they approach you? How does that work out?
They approached me because my friend and I, over the pandemic, we were making. I have a super talented friend who's a videographer and a video editor, and we were making some fun content with the sunglasses, and so they saw us on social media and they reached out to us.
And was he the one who made your promo video?
Yeah, his name is Alex Raban, and his company is called Room for Cream Films, and he's based here on the Central Coast of California as well. We were living in the same place over the pandemic. We were in the same bubble and we were bored. So we just started making random videos. Yeah, it just kind of went from there. And then once work came back, I hired him to do my promo material because he understands the aesthetic. He gets it. He gets the vibe. And he makes me look cool. What can I say?
Yeah, during my research, I brought up your website. And I thought, boy, that's one of the best promo videos I've seen. It's fast paced, and I didn't hear any music. It's got music and dialogue, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a background track. Yeah,
I couldn't get it to work, so I'm just watching the video.
Okay.
Without any dialogue, any comedy, any music, just thinking, man, that's a well done video.
Maybe I need to take a look at the website. It's been a while.
I don't know. Maybe because I couldn't figure out how to play the. That could be on me because I'm not known for my. Okay. Technical. I can turn the computer on. That's about it. So yeah, mine runs on steam power.
Well, hopefully this is recording.
I hope so. But my wife's the engineer. So without her, I wouldn't be able to do it. So hopefully. Yeah. But I suggest listeners, if you're not familiar with Mark and his work, and your website is it The Wilder Show? What's your website address?
I believe it's thewildershow.com.
I think so too.
And that's an easy way to find. You can find me if you type in The Wilder Show to Instagram. That's what a lot of people do, find me through Instagram, also on YouTube.
And what a great name, right? What an easy, great name to just have, Mark Wilder, right?
That's my last name. Yeah, it works. It works great. It works great for the show.
I think there was a James Wilder, I think, in my memory somewhere as a juggler. Or maybe I'm thinking James Marcel, the first chainsaw juggler. But I love Mark Wilder. What a great name. That's, once again, The Wilder Show. And it kind of fits with your aesthetic because you're wild, right?
Yeah, where I grew up, I was Mark Wilder. So it has a different ring to it.
Yeah, what happened with the accent? I don't hear any, hey, park the car. I'm Mark Wilder. No, nothing like that?
Yeah, I've been on the West Coast a while now. Yeah, more than half my life, so.
Yeah, you definitely come across as a Californian. So let's look at the transition then. It's like, actually, you started making some money. So you have this idea, you want to do something athletic and creative, and for some reason, juggling is your answer. Which I'm glad it is, because that was my answer too. But how do you start actually going about making some money and starting a career?
I had found that the Cal Poly, the local San Luis Obispo juggling club, and I met Bill Robinson, who was my juggling mentor, and he's not a performer, but he was very encouraging. And what I think is so great about the juggling community, there's a lot of niche communities that are very elitist, and the juggling community is so open. It doesn't matter what level you are; it's so accepting. It's like, oh, you're also into this weird thing? Come on, play with us. So that's the experience I found at the juggling club. And Bill Robinson, from the first day I met him, he said, you got to go to a festival. You got to go to a festival. So I went to my first juggling festival. I believe it was Isla Vista. Mm-hmm.
Good one. Yeah.
I could juggle three clubs on a unicycle because I had the unicycling background. And I was approached by Jack and Jerry Calvin, and they asked where I performed, and I had only been juggling for, I don't know, maybe a year. And I was not a performer, but I then went to the public show at Isla Vista and saw performers and realized that's the direction I wanted to go. And I thought maybe I could, like, I can't juggle like that guy, but I think I could be funny on stage. So.
And in school, did you do any like dramatics? You do any theater? You do any comedy? Because you're kind of a natural comedian. Any background in that growing up?
Not really growing up. If I could go back, I would definitely go back and do theater. I'd be a drama kid. It's really my passion. But yeah, I was a pretty introverted stoner in high school. So I found it a little later. In college, I was a mascot. I was a college mascot.
Okay.
Which, the Evergreen State Gooey Duck.
Is that what you were? You were the Gooey Duck?
Yeah, the you Evergreen the State duck? College... You I was were, the gooey
oh
duck.
Yeah, I love the world's. Duck. No, I don't know.
Oh yeah, it's the world's largest burrowing bivalve.
That's why I love it. Yeah. Oh, it's a bivalve. That's even better.
Yeah, it's a giant clam.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I was the Evergreen State College is where I did my college year, and then I was the mascot for 3 years following that year.
So you weren't. You actually had 1 year of college, but 4 years of mascotting. Is that...
That's right.
Is that a paid position to be the mascot? Is that a job?
It was completely voluntary.
So you're killing it at that point, basically. You're an unpaid mascot.
Yeah.
And you're working.
When I moved to California, I moved to the Bay Area, and I did some improv classes.
Nice.
in San Francisco. So that was kind of an exposure to some sort of acting. But yeah, that was about it. And then I just decided to go for it. And I started performing at the downtown farmers market in San Luis Obispo, which essentially is like a street festival on Thursday nights.
Mm-hmm. I always wanted to get down there because you know, I was in a little too far to go down conveniently, but I was a couple hours away.
Right.
And I'd heard that people were doing shows out there. I think Project Dynamite was also out there for a while. Is that right? Is that ringing a bells?
I know Alex Clark was performing there as a soloist.
Yeah, because I'm always looking for venues, especially ones I can actually get out to. Is that still going on now? Because you live where, in Morro Bay now?
I live in Morro Bay, but yeah, I haven't done any busking in years. It is definitely still going on, and there's still a vibrant, at least a few performers who come up there. I know Derek McAllister, the mm-hmm. fuzzy juggler, performs yeah. there. Yeah, he's kind of the regular now.
Nice, because you have to find that kind of thing, whether it's street or amusement park, to somewhere we can just start doing shows where the entry is pretty easy. Like there's not, the gatekeeping is pretty minimal. So I imagine the Thursday was pretty easy to get into and at least get started.
It was great. Also, San Luis Obispo is a very warm, welcoming community it was hard to die out there. Every show was good, even though at that point it was raw energy. I didn't know what I was doing. So,
yeah,
but it was, that's where I got my start.
And in Morro Bay, you actually live neighbors with a pretty well-known juggler who I know pretty well. Your neighbors with Barry Friedman, right? Out there in Morro Bay.
He lives about a mile away. Yeah. He settled down here. You've met him?
Well, I haven't seen him in years. But I used to know him pretty well. But I know I haven't seen his house down there even. So I have not gone to visit yet.
Okay, well you'll have to come visit. We also have a great pickleball court nearby.
That's what I hear. I hear you have a juggling club that meets once a week.
Yes.
You have otters and you have pickleball. So those are some of my things.
I tell people our juggling club, when Barry shows up, it's like having a pickup game of basketball and Michael Jordan just drops in. To me, it's still mind-blowing. It's also mind-blowing I'm on the phone with you, Dan. You know, I worked with a duo for 8 years, and we can talk about that, but I just consumed every video of a juggling duo I could, and obviously the Raspini brothers were my idols. That was the pinnacle. That's what I wanted. So I watched everything, and you guys were what I aspired to be, and still try and be like you guys.
I try as well. I think I fall short as well. But yeah, so you had one of those careers, which is kind of common, where you sort of start with a duo. And I think starting with a duo is good for a lot of people.
I was solo for a couple of years before I met my partner. And then we decided to link up.
And your show was what? Something Ridiculous.
That's right.
The Something Ridiculous Show. Not my favorite name for a team.
It is surprising how many people have trouble spelling the word ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just also kind of pigeonholes you, I think, is sort of, you know, I don't think it really fits the vibe of your act. Like, you guys were not ridiculous necessarily. You were both like high energy, sort of good looking California energetic guys.
Go on.
Of course, you were much taller than your partner. So, and his name, I forget his name.
He went by Von John. That was his stage name.
Okay. Right. The only thing I remember about him was that he named his son, I thought it was Juggles, but you told me it was Juggleton.
Correct.
Which I love. That's commitment. Of course, you're committing someone else, but
that is commitment. That's even a greater commitment than growing a mullet.
Yeah. But I guess because what do they call you if you're Juggleton? What do they call you? Juggle for short. Hey, Juggle.
Doesn't Jugs. They Jug. Call them Jugs. Yeah.
They call them Jugs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in the team, and so you've done solo for a little bit. So you've started, why even put together a team at all? You're already working solo. What about a team was even attractive to you?
My mentor had forced me, basically, he offered my services to the Isla Vista Juggling Festival to be the MC of the show. And I was nervous. I didn't think I was ready. I MC'd the show. It went really well. And yeah, my ex-partner, Von John, was in that audience. And he saw me. And I think he saw someone he wanted to try and work with. So he reached out to me after that. And after some thinking, I decided to give it a try because I do enjoy duo acts. There's a lot of potential, a lot of possibilities with different kinds of tricks. And yeah, we had an amazing run. We did a lot of partner acrobatics. So, you know, a two high on the unicycle with us juggling on a table.
Wow. Yeah.
And we started doing this when I was already 32, which is not really the age to start doing acrobatics, but we had a great time and we were successful together. We were able to book cruise ships and halftime shows. And we were also still, our bread and butter was also the fair circuit. We did a lot of fairs. In 2020 is when we parted ways once all of our work got canceled.
That's sometimes a good time, right? It's hard to separate when you got work coming up. Like, oh,
yeah, it was just ripping off the Band-Aid, which made it a lot easier. Yeah.
Well, what were some of the issues in teams? Obviously, one issue is splitting the money is always a tricky one, especially when you're working in venues where you see other people who you think, why am I as good as that guy?
Right.
He's getting twice as much money as me. Why not? Why am I doing this with a partner? So money was always an issue. What did you find were the pros and cons of working with a partner?
Yeah, for me, I didn't really think about the money. I love performing. I think the pros with a partner is you're not always have to be the focus. You don't always have to be on. You can share the burden of the show, the energy. And obviously, visually, it's a larger show.
Yeah.
I was juggling on the giraffe unicycle, and he was on the circus ladder. And then the two of us passing clubs was visually, it was huge. It was big. And then also, yeah, the acrobatic potential, and then obviously passing around an audience volunteer, that classic stuff. There's a lot of stuff you can do. And a passing routine,
yeah,
as you know, it's fun to pass. And I came from a passing background, learning at a juggling club. But actually, it was years before I started working on developing solo tricks. So it took me a while to kind of work on the tricks that I now have in my current show.
I like both. I think it's good doing both. I think they have different experiences, and I think it's good to be able to do both. If you can just do the team and you don't have a solo act, I think some people feel trapped, like they have to have their partner. And I think it's better when you choose to, like, I can do both. And if you can maintain even a situation where I think you work with a partner occasionally and then you're mostly solo, I think that would be great. You know, you can still get together. I don't know if any partners really have that going on per se. I know Barry's not really performing, and I'm kind of retired now myself, but thinking about getting back into it. Maybe Dan and Mark Wilder. Oh, Mark.
Yeah, let's talk.
I can't do the fair circuit, man. It's too hard. That fair circuit's too hard for me.
Well, you're right. It's a grind. I think not a lot of performers want to do it. It's work.
Well, let's talk about it a little bit, because if you look at the environment nowadays about what's available to jugglers, you know, I think the corporates have gone down quite a bit. I don't know what the halftime market's like, but fairs and cruises definitely seem still pretty vibrant. So if someone wanted to get into fairs, how important is it to be a member of like the Western Fairs Association and showcase? Is that kind of your first step, or how would someone get into the fair circuit?
Yeah, that's hugely important to join a fair association and to attend their annual convention, which usually for most of them happens in the wintertime, the off season. And there's the IAFE, which is the International Association of Fairs and Expositions. That is what I went to first and kind of got lost in the crowd because it's huge. And then Western Fairs Association is just the Western states, which obviously is what I'm more interested in. It made more sense. It's a smaller group. Everybody knows everyone. So it's important to be seen there. And then if you can showcase, especially if you're a new act, that is very important.
Yeah, my understanding is it takes a couple of years. Like, they want to trust you that you're not just a flash in the pan. You're just not coming in. So sometimes the first year, just kind of meeting people and making connections. And then you get a showcase.
Yeah, you might get a couple fairs the first year,
yeah,
and then build from there. I think I was very lucky. When I was with the duo, I think it was something new and fresh, and we had good energy, and we hit the fairs pretty hard from the beginning. We had great success. So I think they're always looking for something new and something different and fun. And if you have, obviously, it's very important that it's a family-friendly show. There's a lot of stuff you can say in the street that you can't do at a fairgrounds.
Yeah, you want to avoid complaints. Complaints are like kiss of death, you know? But it also seems as if, you know, you kind of go in a situation at the fairs where you have to have the right thing, because they want something like to do is walk around or be part of the parade. So you have to have kind of a visual act, but also do a walk-around character too. Is that something you include, or is just the visibility of your costume and act that as you're traveling around, people can see you and just sort of be a character at the fair, right? Being a walk around is part of it.
You have to be super flexible,
right,
and adaptable. You cannot be rigid, because every fair is different. Sometimes I'm performing only stage shows with, right, you know, with a stage technician and great sound and a seated audience. Sometimes I'm doing just street shows at a fair, you know, circle shows. Other times I'm doing more roving walk around where I'll just ride around on my unicycle juggling and then stop and do kind of mini shows for a small group and move on to a next group. And then sometimes I'm doing all three of those things in the same day. And sometimes your green room is
yeah.
is an awesome green room that you're sharing with entertainers. Sometimes You're in an office with sharing it with the office secretaries. You know, you just have to be able to provide them with the entertainment that fits the situation.
Yeah, there's a lot of different chores. Yeah,
you're also performing in a place where people aren't necessarily expecting you all the time, and they're not there for you.
Right.
Whereas if you're performing in a theater at a cruise ship, they're coming there to see you. At a fair, you're kind of fighting to keep them there, and they have a very short attention span. And you're battling with sound, where there's loud sound going on everywhere. And so, yeah, it's and you're out there in the wind and the sun, which is very challenging as a juggler. So definitely I simplify what I can do out there. There's other jugglers like my good friend Jeremiah Johnston, mm-hmm. who is doing, obviously, incredibly skilled juggling at a fairgrounds. But I keep my show pretty simple.
He's selling something different, right? Yeah, I mean, everybody has their own niche. And, you know, Jeremiah is more of this flow juggling stylist who has these sort of longer, intricate juggling routines. You're more of like the comedy juggler. Right? You got the big stunt, you got the dialogue, get a lot of laughs.
Heavy on the character, for sure.
Yeah, heavy on the character.
He's crushing it.
Oh, he's crushing it. Yeah, yeah.
I love what he does. And it's the only unfortunate thing is we rarely get to work together because most fairs don't hire two jugglers.
So yeah, but there's a good circuit. You see people out there, what Eric Haynes, with the one-man band, and you know, I see a lot mm-hmm. of other guys who seem to be, you run into the same people. So I'm sure there's a camaraderie and kind of a friendship that develops. Because there's a lot of downtime. Like, you're working now, and what, you start working at 4 today? Is that your schedule?
Yeah, today I don't work until 4. So I'm at my home fair, which I haven't worked in years. So
nice.
I'm able to sleep in my bed at night and not in my van, which is nice.
Is that your usual on the road? Do you kind of do hotels? Or are you more of a van guy? Is that your... to save money? What's your life on the road like?
Yeah, oftentimes I'm in the Sprinter van at the fairgrounds or somewhere nearby. If the fair provides a hotel, then obviously I accept and stay in the hotel. But yeah, it just kind of varies depending on the fair.
And do you try to mitigate environmental issues? Are there some fairs that you've been to, you're like, oh my God, that's so hot, that place? I mean, because that's the thing I notice is I've done some fairs where there were times, man, it was just brutally hot. And some of the stages didn't have coverings. And I was at one where they wanted me to do two parades a day. Like do three shows plus two parades.
Yeah.
I hated that, man. I hated that a lot.
Fairs are going to be hot. It's the summertime. Right, right. You're working outdoors in the summertime. If you can't handle the heat, you're not cut out for fairs. I think in my mind, I'm out there. I'm doing 3 30-minute sets.
Right.
That's it. I'm not in the heat all day.
Sure, sure.
I can go out and perform for 30 minutes and then go to somewhere where it's shaded. And listen, it's a lot easier than being out on a concrete slab all day. So,
right, right. Yeah. But don't forget, you're Mark Wilder.
I'm still getting paid to juggle. It's the dream. I'm getting paid to juggle. Are you kidding?
And what's your schedule like? How many fairs would you do in a year? How many days are you working at fairs in a given year?
I think this year I have 135, 140 fair days.
Right. And at $10,000 a day, you're making... But fairs do pay quite
well. No, that's what the hypnotists get paid.
No, hypnotists are big, right? Oh, I don't like the hypnotist show. God, because there's so much wasted time, right? So much wasted time getting people up there and testing them out. And oh, I'd like to be a hypnotist. No, I wouldn't. But they do attract big crowds.
You could do it.
Oh yeah, I think I could. Crowds at the fairs and stuff. So that's pretty good. Do you mix other things in, or are you basically just happy just doing the fairs now, or do you go on some cruises still?
I haven't. I've the one venue I'd like to get back into is the halftime shows. Hmm. I'm a huge basketball fan, so for me just being on the court is really cool. To be honest, I have not pushed anything. The fairs are very tiring. So
right. I think fairs they're probably some of the best money because you're doing, you know, a day rate. So you do a 10-day fair or a 16-day fair.
Yeah.
Something like that really adds up, you know, way more than a cruise. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. They're hard and it's work, but they pay really well. So
yeah. And what's your plan for the future? Are you saving money? Do you have a kind of an exit strategy? At what age do you think, you know, because you're in your mid-40s now or early 40s. Are you feeling that, wow, I can't do this forever? Are you feeling good about being out there? What do you see the future kind of looking like as far as a fair performer?
Really coming with the hard questions now, Dan.
So how do you see your life as you get older and more decrepit? You think you'll still be able to do this?
Maybe I'll just retire to Pinole and play pickleball. I'm not sure.
You could. It's a Pinole, yeah. and start a podcast and make that big podcast money.
Yeah, there's always podcasting. I wouldn't say I have an exit strategy right now. I'm enjoying, still yes. loving what I do. But yeah, I think even if I wasn't unicycling, just juggling and working the fairs, I think body maintenance, especially as you get older, but even at a younger age, it's very important to, I watch what I eat. I do training outside of juggling and unicycling to stay fit for the fair circuit. I think of myself as a professional athlete, and I have to, take care of my body, especially as I get older. So I'm trying. I'd like to at least another 5 years doing what I'm doing. We'll see.
Well, it makes perfect sense. And I think being sober is probably a big help, because I imagine, on the fair circuit, there might be some people who are hitting the partying pretty hard, and that will cost them in the end, with just the money they spend and just the lifestyle isn't professional, right? So I think the way you're approaching it is, as an athlete, is a very professional approach.
Definitely not eating a lot of fair food.
Yeah, so you don't eat the elephant ears and the... What is your favorite fair food? If you had to eat something junky, what would be that thing at the fair?
And you can't go wrong with a corn dog or a cinnamon roll. I mean, it all tastes good. I don't indulge too often.
Words to live by. You can't go wrong with a corn dog. That's a good, that's my new motto. You can't go wrong with a corn dog. Hey, so let's talk about some career highlights, because you have done some TV and some other types of venues.
Sure.
You were on the Gong Show. This was the new Gong Show. Who were the judges on the Gong Show when you were on it?
Yeah, I was on there as the duo.
Okay.
We had like a basketball themed act where we juggled basketballs. And let's see, the judges were Will Arnett.
I like him. Yeah, Will Arnett.
Ed Helms.
Yeah.
And there was a female actress who's like very famous. The name is escaping me right now, but yeah.
Someone even less impressive than Ed Helms. Right.
I do think she was not into the short shorts, and Ed Helms was into the juggling act.
Nice, so. Nice. And what about America's Got Talent? Have you tried that route? Is that something you would be looking at?
I actually went down this past year for an audition and killed it. I had an appointment audition, and I said, I know a lot of performers, kind of a bad taste in their mouth with America's Got Talent, and I said, well, what the heck? I'm available. I'm sitting at home. I'll drive down there and give it a shot. And had an incredible audition. Had the room cracking up, left, and got completely ghosted. Maybe that's why a lot of entertainers don't want to do AGT anymore. But I feel like getting on is great exposure. But yeah, that's my experience with AGT. 2 years in a row, the year before, I sent a video a submission after they requested it and didn't hear back. And then the following year, they reached out to me directly and said, you should come to audition in person.
Yeah.
And I did. I had to drive down to LA, which is about 3.5 hours, and stay there for the night. And the audition went really well, and then I never heard back. So,
plus, you don't need it. I think at your point, you're well established in the fairs. You got a great reputation in the fairs. You're doing really well, as far as getting bookings. It couldn't hurt you. But I think just the problem is there's so few options for, things that pop that give you that kind of bump, in show business. As far as helping you in your career. And certainly names like that, America's Got Talent, whether the format is great, because obviously back in the day when you could just do your act on comedy shows or late night shows, it's much better than the chance of them judging you and not liking you or saying things that are unfair about your act or whatever. But you got to live in the environment you're in and take advantage of the things that are currently available. It's still one of the few promotional spots that kind of have some kind of punch.
Right. I had a really fun kind of random appearance on the Ellen Show before that show went off the air. And unfortunately, that wasn't They did not use, they didn't even use my name or my show name.
Right.
But it looks great in a promo video. And, you know, when a fair manager, it gives you, yeah, like you said, it gives you a little more pop, a little more power. Yeah. A fair manager wants to book, you know, like, oh, this guy's been on TV. People think TV is a big deal still. So it definitely helps.
Well, someone reached out to me the other day, last week, like, how do I get into corporates, or how do I, you know, get more money for my act? How do I keep moving up? And one thing you got to do is you have to get associated with celebrities. And you have to do national type appearances, you know, TV appearances, because those are the things that do add value promotionally to your career. So, you know, that's why a lot of people, I think, stand-up comics, you know, nowadays they can go on podcasts with bigger comics or tour with bigger comics, or even that show Kill Tony, which is another weird format show, is a star-making vehicle. So it'd be interesting to see if a juggler ever pops up on that show, Kill Tony. I don't know how well they would do. That's sort of one of the more harsher comedy shows that people are doing nowadays. But it'd be interesting.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Like I say, there's guys who go on complete unknowns. They become regulars on that show, and then they're out touring theaters. So it is a star-making vehicle. And there's very few of those in show business, and very few for jugglers, unfortunately. But as far as like the Ellen thing, is that one of those things like they had on the Leno show where it's kind of like, do we have hidden talent in the audience, or do they bring you on as a performer, or do they have some conceit that, you know, like you're an audience member, or what was the idea of the Ellen DeGeneres show?
There was three of us, two were actors. One, I think, Guess Who Has the Talent. It was, okay. Yeah. So yeah, that was the premise. And I was the hidden talent, and Howie Mandel happened to be the guest host.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So he was moderating and asking questions, and he had to guess which one of us had the talent. So,
oh, did he guess you? I mean, you're kind of a talented looking guy. I mean, you sort of, you know, I can see looking at you.
He did like the mullet. He enjoyed the mullet. I think he was a little jealous of the hair.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
He guessed, I guess he guessed me second. And then the curtain opens behind us. The other two actors walk off, and then I do the talent I claimed to be able to do, which was, I believe, I juggled knives on the unicycle.
Nice, nice.
Just three knives. Yeah, something basic. But
still, those are the kind of fun appearances. Yeah.
I do remember that day, though. We did the run through in the morning, and I didn't get into this industry to get up early in the morning. So,
okay.
Which is why we, when you scheduled this morning interview, I was a little worried. But we did a run through of the trick I was going to do, and all the producers are standing there watching, and it took me sometimes getting on the giraffe, you don't get your first try.
Right, right, right.
Well, this morning it took me like five or six tries. And with each try, I could just like feel the tension grow, and then they just start turning their back to me because they don't,
right,
you
right.
know, it got really, really awkward. So then you go and sit in the green room for 6 hours before you're actually going on. So, and when we finally got down for the taping, there was a lot of, I felt a lot of pressure.
I bet. Yeah.
I got it my first try when we taped.
Good, good, good. Cause you can imagine, like, that's always the worst case scenario. I remember when I would do TV shows, it's always like, okay, just don't let me embarrass myself. Right. Good or bad. I don't want something that will haunt me. And now that was even before YouTube, where, you know, we used to watch Edward Jackman. He did this thing where he fell on his butt doing a double pirouette, like on the Merv Griffin show. And we used to watch that over and over again of him falling. So when you're on these shows, you're like, just let it go well enough that I'm not in mortal fear of the result.
I make a living embarrassing myself, so I'm not too worried with that.
But yeah. I can also tell you the time where we almost killed a couple people in the audience, but that's a different story too. So when a garden weasel flew out into the crowd.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's always the nightmare when something flies out in the crowd. I've had a club hit a woman in the face before.
God. Yeah.
You know, it's just.
Now in this case, Barry was doing this trick where he had the garden weasels, you know, the big heavy thing on the stick. And we would do this like juggling in 3D joke. And he would like pretend to like whip the garden weasel into the crowd, like a big heavy chop motion. Right.
Right.
So he does that. The head of the garden weasel flies off.
Oh, no.
It flies at least 80 feet into the audience. I mean, way launched into the crowd, right?
Yeah.
And this thing's got to weigh a couple pounds of just metal spikes, basically.
Yeah.
And so I'm playing the drums, and I see Barry jump off the stage and run into the audience. I'm thinking, what's the deal with that? And yet what had happened is it had flown out, and it kind of brushed this guy's arm who had been wearing like a leather jacket. So it kind of fell into the crowd. So it didn't hurt anybody. But if it had gone straight using the momentum of a chop right towards the guy he was sort of doing it towards, and it just had flown at him, could have killed him, I guess. So, but then we grabbed it.
Of all the people, it got the guy wearing the leather jacket. Like,
no, it's the kind of thing where it was pretty early in the show. That's like one of our first routines. We're able to come back on stage, finish the routine, finish the show, standing ovation, and just like, whoosh, boy, that was a close one. So. And now what about this unicycle basketball? You say you've competed internationally. Where are some of the places you've gone, and what position do you play in the basketball?
Unicon is kind of like the world championships of unicycling, and it's every 2 years in a different location. I've competed in Italy, Spain, Montreal, and more recently last summer in Minnesota. It was the first time it was in the States in about 20 years. So it attracts competitors from all over the world, and basketball is one of the two team sports. Most of the sports are individual, and anything from mountain unicycling to artistic freestyle, which is kind of like, you know, like a figure skating mm-hmm. routine to music, but on a unicycle. And yeah, I compete in basketball. It's kind of an obsession of mine.
And is there an official team? Like, do we have an American team, or how do you find other like-minded unicycle basketball players?
There was a team up in the Bay Area, in Berkeley, the Berkeley Revolution. That's how I got introduced to it when I went up to the Berkeley Juggling Festival years ago. And then I started my own team down here, the Slow Ballers out of San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm. Now everyone's spread out, and it's hard to keep a team going, but we have all of our players in different places come together to compete in the world championships. So it's not we are the only American team that is competing currently, but we're not like, technically we're not Team USA. We're just a club team. There's a few teams from France who are the dominant teams.
Well, it must be tough when you're kind of more of a pickup type of game. You know, you're putting people together. They probably have full year long where they're playing pretty much consistently. Is there actually a circuit of unicycle basketball, or just this once a year Unicon?
Well, this is every 2 years, the world championships.
Every 2 years.
In France, they do have a league, and they have several tournaments annually. So yeah, that is kind of the separating factor, that we just come together every 2 years to play, and we still end up getting a bronze or a silver.
And are there positions, like, are you a center? Are you a forward? Is it like regular basketball?
It is like regular basketball. We don't have, you know, we definitely have the point guard, the guy that carries the ball more. I'm the tallest guy, so I tend to be placed as a center, but I'm also one of the best outside shooters and ball handlers. So it's kind of, it's a fluid position. It's not, a definite.
And do they ever mix it up with giraffes and regular unicycles, or just giraffes? Or, because I know they have the smaller, but do they have a giraffe unit as well, or just the smaller unicycles?
Yeah, it has to be, I think, 20 inch or 24 inch. And it's just, your standard unicycles. And this last tournament last year, we were able to connect with a former rider from the King Charles troupe, which is, you know, a famous circus act. And he competed with us. His name is Kasim. And it's just really cool to connect with another performer from a whole, he grew up multi-generational within the King Charles troupe.
Yeah, they were famous, the basketball troupe that played at circuses and quite well known. I like the King Charles group. They were pretty fun act.
Yeah, super cool.
Super cool. Well, that's great. And then on a mountain unicycle, that's a much bigger, heavier tire, correct?
Yeah, just like a mountain bike. It's a fat tire. It's a heavier duty frame. There's a brake.
Oh, there's a brake on a unicycle?
Yeah, it's a disc brake, but it's still a fixed hub. So you're pedaling to move, whether you're going uphill or downhill. So it's a When you ride a unicycle, you can never relax. You're always,
right.
If you're moving, you're pedaling.
Now, my unicycle experience was I could ride a small one. I bought a giraffe and I rode it a couple of times and just said, nope, not for me. It scared me. I don't like being off the ground like that. You know, it's, you never fallen off. You never fell to the butt.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Especially, mountain unicycling. It's one of those if you're not 100% mentally focused,
right,
and watching your line, if you start to drift and think about what you're going to have for dinner, next thing you know, you're 20 feet off trail in the chaparral.
So a contest is it purely a time thing, or do they have a style as well when you're going down the mountain, or just time?
Yeah, so I don't compete in that, but yeah, it's a race,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do have other events where it's they're judged on style or trick difficulty.
But I bet you that's super dangerous if you're seeing how fast you can go down the hill and you're racing someone else.
Yeah, downhill racing. They're wearing, you know, helmets and armor.
Ugh, no thanks. So what do you think the difference is? Like, if you've been to a big Unicon, how many people are we talking about? Is it a couple thousand or is it smaller?
That's a great question. I think, yeah, it depends where the location is. I know this last one was pretty lightly attended, but especially when it's in Europe and they can all just hop in their Volkswagens and drive over, it can be a few thousand for sure. Mm. The next one is next summer in Austria.
And you've told me you've never been to an IGA festival, but you go to this Unicon every 2 years.
I know, it's a shame. I'd love to go to IGA. I've been watching everyone's videos that they've been posting from this past week. It's definitely a dream of mine. I'm not able to go to a lot of juggling festivals I'd like to go to. It's just a challenge.
Well, they're in the summer. I mean, that's when you're working the most, and you know it's hard to take time off work to, you know, when you're doing the fairs. That's a pretty prime fair time when they have those festivals.
That's the exact reason. It's tough. That's my work season is kind of the summer months, and it's hard to get away. I can't really say no to work
I mean, if you're a professional, that's what you do, and that's how we were coming up. It was like, well, you know, are we professional jugglers? It's nice when you can go, but if you're turning down work to go to a juggling festival, it didn't seem very professional to me, and to us, as far as like, well, are you a hobbyist or are you a professional? If you're a professional, work comes first. But looking back, you're like, well, why do I make money? I make money so I can do the things I enjoy doing.
Right.
If one of the things I really enjoy doing is going to the festival, well, why am I making money if I can't do the things I want to do? So there's kind of a catch-22 a bit in those things. But what do you think the difference is between like a unicycle community and a juggling community? Do you find differences in the participants?
Oh, that is interesting. I think, well, when you go to these Unicons, there's a lot of kids. I don't know if that's true at IGAs. There's like a lot of younger people unicycle, like teenagers, because a lot of those events are pretty... They're built for younger people, like downhill,
right,
mountain unicycle, and then a lot of people kind of age out of it. Maybe there might be a little more of the elitist air as opposed to like a juggling group. Like I love the juggling community of how open it is and welcoming, and definitely with unicycling there might be a little more. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the major difference is. I know when I go to a juggling festival, I can be the best unicyclist. And when I go to a unicycling convention, I can be one of the best jugglers. But I'm not very good at either. So,
well,
but you put them together and you got a show.
Well, that's the thing. Like, even when I was coming up, I thought, okay, I wanted to be a juggler like Chris Cremo, like that style of the slick whatever. And I didn't think I could do that. And I don't think I could be a stand-up because I used to love Woody Allen. I didn't think I could do that. But then you start finding these things where like, oh, I could combine this and that. Like if I'm a decent juggler and a decent comedian, well, I could be a really good comedy juggler because some people are one or the other. But to have both skills.
You got to put them together like a mustache and a mullet.
Well, I mean, the thing about your act.
You think if I just had the mullet or just had the mustache, I could do what I'm doing? No, it takes both, Dan.
You know, I'm not big on the mustache. I mean, a lot of guys... You know, have like the twirly mustache, like as their identity.
Right.
But you have like the theme, like the mullet and the mustache and the costuming works to create this 80s character. If you're just the guy with the mustache, to me, that doesn't have as much potential as what you're doing. Because you have a real cohesive, complete character. And it's, oh, yeah. I mean, it's fun. You
know? Oh, thank you.
How many oh, yeahs per show is that? That's like your catchphrase, though, right? Like, oh, yeah.
It is. Yeah. It's, and now when I walk the fairgrounds,
yeah,
people are like yelling across the way. Yeah. So,
hey, man, a lot of good things to learn about this because whenever I coach, I'm like, okay, if you can have a catchphrase, if people can recognize you with the costume and the look. You know, Mark Wilder is not really a very 80s name, but it's a great name as far as your act, because I'm sure you could work that into your copy, you know, the Wilder, the wildest act, that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
So what's next? So what's the rest of the year look like? So how many more weeks? It's basically a summer thing. So how does your winters look?
Well, my first fair starts in mid-February down in Riverside County. And then my last gig of the season is in October. Huh? It's a pumpkin farm up in Wheatland near Sacramento. So I don't have a weekend free until November.
Wow, that's great.
And I don't have many days off until then either. So, but yeah, I get to spend the winter months juggling with your old friend Barry, yeah, here in Morro Bay.
Nice, man. Sounds like you're living a great life. Great life. Now, are you a married guy? You got kids? I'm not sure about your life. Is it just you on the road? What's going on there?
Just me, Dan. Well, yeah.
Okay. I'm sure you have opportunities out there. You're a tall, strapping, good-looking guy out on an entertainer out in the world. I'm sure you're making some connections out there, I hope.
Yeah. I'm always making friends wherever I go. Life is pretty good. I have no complaints.
Good. Well, man, like I said, I'm going to butter you up one last time at the end. I'm a big fan because you seem to have worked it out. Like they say, this cohesive idea of the name, the act, the look, big, energetic, fun act. I would hire you in a second. And that's what my biggest praise is. If I had a fair, I would look at you, look at Jeremiah, and just go, okay, there's some really good people working this circuit, and I think you're at the top of the list. That's what I want to end it at. I want to thank you, Mark Wilder, for coming on the show. I want to come see you at a fair sometime. I want to see if I can kick your butt at pickleball. That would be fun.
Can I play on a unicycle? Has anyone played pickleball on a unicycle?
No, but that would be super fun. That'd be hard, though, I think, because the side-to-side movement.
True, yeah.
Would be really hard. But
I just want to say, hearing any compliment from you, compliments in general, being an Irish Catholic from Boston, make me uncomfortable. And coming from one of my idols, I'm left speechless. I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, to me, it's always about one thing. It's about when people go out and they see a juggler. We have kind of a bad rap sometimes, but there are people out there, where they're on cruises or at fairs, where people walk away and they go, wow, juggling is great. Juggling is fun. It's great entertainment. I really enjoyed that. And that serves all of us well. Like when people see jugglers and they walk away with a good, positive thinking about juggling, it helps all of us. So when you're out there, yeah, doing your thing, I think it's great. I think you're a great ambassador. You're showing people how fun this can be. You're doing big tricks, man. I really like what you're doing. I just want to say, Mark Wilder, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks for being a guest and best wishes. When you go out there, let's do it together. One last time. Here we go.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Dan.
I hope you enjoyed Drop Everything Podcast number 140, my conversation with Mark Wilder. Thanks, Mark. Good luck out on the fair circuit and stay cool. And oh yeah. All right. Go check out the IJ at juggle.org. Check out their opportunities to attend festivals, buy products, get mentoring, so much more at the IJA. All right, go out in the world. Drop everything, except when you're juggling.